I'm a researcher at the Urban Institute in Washington, D.C. And I'm going to talk a bit about the findings from the second national evaluation of the Children's Health Insurance Program, which we completed last year. This was essentially a replication of an earlier evaluation of the implementation of CHIP, which was conducted by the Urban Institute and Mathematica Policy Research together. This was a congressionally mandated evaluation with the CHIP Reauthorization Act, and it was funded by the Assistant Secretary of Planning and Evaluation. And I'm going to briefly just talk a little bit about the background of the CHIP program. I'm going to touch on findings about enrollment eligibility and retention, as well as outreach, crowd out, benefits and cost sharing, and then some service delivery findings. And then I'm going to briefly talk about the future of CHIP under the Affordable Care Act. So it's been shown that the CHIP program has contributed substantially to decreases in uninsurance among children. I mean, we saw a decline from 15% to almost about 10% between 1997, when it was first implemented, in 2011. Though during the Bush administration, there was quite a bit of funding uncertainty. The CHIP program endured throughout, and with CHIPRA, the Reauthorization Act, in 2009, additional funding was extended to the program, and a lot of there's additional security as well as some new initiatives that we're going to talk about now. So the key provisions of CHIPRA include a requirement that states need to verify citizenship of children, and that they also need to require a 30-day grace period before disenrolling anyone due to non-payment of premiums. This legislation also prohibited parental coverage, which was previously allowed under CHIP, but it expanded things as well as limiting them. So they required that all CHIP programs have dental coverage, that they could afford, they could provide a dental-only supplement to people who have employer-sponsored insurance but don't get dental coverage through that. And then there were mental health parity requirements as well as some quality improvement initiatives. So this evaluation is pretty large, and it's actually still ongoing. There is a survey of CHIP enrollees and disenrollees, a national survey of CHIP administrators, which has focused primarily on questions related to health reform, a study of program enrollment and retention, and then analysis of other large survey data. This talk today is based on case studies of 10 states that we did during 2012. And the time period for the evaluation looks at 2006 to 2012, which is basically when the prior evaluation left off. So these are case study methods. 10 states were chosen for in-depth, week-long case studies that were conducted between February and September of 2012. These states were chosen with quite a bit of thought behind it. We have a combination of program types. So there are 4 separate programs, 1 Medicaid expansion, and 5 combination programs. And together, they account for 53% of the nation's These states account for 53% of the nation's uninsured children and almost 60% of all CHIP enrollees in the U.S. They are the 4 largest programs, California, Florida, New York, and Texas. Also, the programs with most generous eligibility limits. So New York's eligibility that goes up to 400% of federal poverty, and then the lowest income limits, which are 200% and include Florida, Michigan, Ohio, Texas, Utah, and Virginia. So in addition to doing key informant interviews with 30 to 40 stakeholders, which would include CHIP administrators, Medicaid administrators, providers, a whole range of folks, we also did 30 focus groups of parents, primarily of parents of CHIP enrollees, but we also had focus group with parents of disenrollees, folks who were eligible but not enrolled, and then where possible, folks that were similar income levels but were enrolled in employer-sponsored insurance. So just to the findings, I'm going to start with eligibility. So CHIP has historically been a fertile testing ground for enrollment and renewal simplifications, and innovations have really, really continued in the post-CHIPRA world. Financial stability that was afforded by the $44 million promised through 2015, has spurred several states to expand their eligibility. So four out of the 10 states raised their income limits, and then 3 out of 10 added coverage for legal immigrant children, and then 3 out of 10 added coverage for children of state employees, which was actually an ACA provision, but the fact that there was more money available for CHIP programs allowed states to really make that decision to expand. CHIPRA performance bonuses, which are available to states that implement 5 of 8 simplification strategies, and these simplification strategies could range from having a joint Medicaid and CHIP application to express lane eligibility, where they use data from other programs like SNAP to automatically enroll folks into CHIP, or continuous 12 months of continuous enrollment. There's a long list of potentially eligible simplification and renewal strategies. So if states implemented 5 out of 8 of them, they would qualify. They can qualify for a performance bonus, and these can be quite large. So while CHIP programs have historically been really innovative in this department, the possibility of performance bonuses spurred states to do even more. And sometimes there were things that they'd been thinking about doing and wanting to do, and just not, there wasn't the political will to do so, but with lots of money behind it, that changed. And so of these just 6 states here that received them out of the 10, that totaled $27 million. And so here we can see what some of the enrollment trends were during this time period. There's modest but steady enrollment gains observed, and there are some plateaus and perhaps even declines in the 2007-2008 period, which is really when the Great Recession hit, and that's when lots of families lost income. And according to many of the stakeholders we talked to, this was not that people dropped off of CHIP because they dropped out of coverage, but that they actually qualified for Medicaid instead of CHIP, so they would go to CHIP. And actually, there were several states that were trying to reach a new population that they hadn't previously reached out to, which were folks that had no experience with public insurance prior to the Great Recession. But that was, I think, a little. These also came at a time when there were a lot of state budget issues, so that wasn't heavily pursued. So CHIP also, one of the hallmarks of CHIP in the early years was really aggressive marketing. And there were broad statewide campaigns that had lots and lots of money behind them, and wanted, you know, with an attempt to raise awareness about CHIP and really sort of establish a brand, particularly in states that had separate CHIP programs, as well as these more targeted community-based outreach efforts. Over time, this has changed, in part because states started to feel like their brands were well established and they didn't need to invest those dollars, but also because of state budgets. In many cases, state outreach budgets were slashed, so the focus really turned to community-based outreach efforts that were targeting the hardest to reach families. CHIPRA outreach grants facilitated these efforts. This was another provision of the CHIP legislation, and the outreach grants funded many of these more grassroots efforts. Every one of the 10 states, by the way, that we visited had a CHIPRA outreach grant. So crowd out was one of these issues that was a really big deal when CHIP was first implemented. People were very concerned that there was going to be a lot of crowd out from private insurance. And we asked lots and lots of questions about it during the first evaluation, and we asked questions about it this time as well. We got pretty much the same answer, which is we don't really think it's an issue. But that said, states are implementing crowd out strategies mostly in the form of waiting periods. So those waiting periods have changed. So they used to be longer. Now they tend to be shorter. They had to have not been insured for maybe about 4 to 6 months, but generally there are exceptions to that, having lost a job recently, affordability issues. I mean, the exception lists are quite long. So you sort of, in most cases, if somebody needs the coverage, they can get it. States with separate CHIP programs, have quite a bit of flexibility in their benefit design, and they always have. They have the ability to offer quite a bit less than Medicaid, but that said, they've always been quite generous. Modeled on private insurance coverage. They often have met much more than the minimum standards, including offering dental coverage. So as a result, CHIPRA's impact on benefits was pretty limited. As I mentioned earlier, states were required to offer dental coverage and mental health parity. And of the states that we visited, really the only change that we found states really having to make was to offer the coverage of medically necessary orthodontia, and in some cases to remove annual limits to mental health benefits. States have also worked really hard to align their CHIP benefit packages with Medicaid, given that families often shift pretty frequently between the two programs. They, you know, trying to ease that shift. Cost sharing is another thing that's been prominent in CHIP programs. States have the flexibility to impose premiums, co-payments, deductibles, co-insurance, as long as it all adds up to less than 5% of family income. This is in contrast to Medicaid. And so there's always been some cost sharing, and families and stakeholders alike have seen this as a positive because it feels like they're buying into their care. There's a greater investment. This is one place where there was quite a bit of increase in order to try to offset some of the budget constraints in the last several years, but then maintenance of effort rules that came with the ACA limited further increases. So some of these were shifted to co-payments, those can only make so much money. CHIP programs have also historically used mandatory risk-based managed care as their service delivery model, and this has been seen as a positive for both access and quality of care. The quality of care in CHIP is regarded quite highly. There's always some mumblings about there not being enough pediatric specialty care available, but that I think is true in the private market as well. I think that the reliance on managed care has been a huge boon for that. And then there have been a few quality improvement efforts that have gone with CHIPRA, including some of these quality demonstrations as well as other reporting requirements. So when we conducted this evaluation, there was still quite a bit of uncertainty. The Supreme Court had not yet ruled on the ACA. So many of the CHIP programs that we spoke with were sort of in a hold and wait period. They weren't really ready to commit to anything. But what they were is at the table. The stakeholders who were implementing the ACA really wanted the CHIP folks' input because they had done such a great job of streamlining enrollment and doing outreach and getting application assisters out there. So they've definitely been involved in conversations. So just quickly in conclusion, CHIPRA has provided much needed financial stability to the program, and this has enabled eligibility expansions. And states responded to these CHIPRA bonuses by continuing to simplify enrollment and renewal. And the CHIPRA outreach grants really helped to stem any declines in enrollment by promoting more outreach. The Affordable Care Act's maintenance of effort rules played a huge role in safeguarding CHIP from cuts. They were not allowed to cut many things related to CHIP based on the maintenance of effort rules. And the impact on benefits was limited. We see managed care continuing to grow and cost sharing remaining a prominent feature of CHIP programs. But the long-term future of CHIP is really uncertain. I think the Affordable Care Act raises questions about how CHIP is going to fit into the post-reform landscape. There are questions about premium stacking as well as just families and how they're going to manage this system. And then also there are some questions about funding after 2015. So regardless of the outcome, though, I think people are really committed to maintaining broad access to comprehensive and high-quality care for children.